Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
This weekend saw the passing of an African giant, one of the last greats. It's a generation of men that fought for the liberty of South Africa, the freedom that is now enjoyed by all South Africans. Of course, we're talking about the passing of Archbishop Emeritus Desmond Tutu. But why was he such a giant amongst men, and what was his contribution towards the freedom? Joining me is Ilan Lex. He's an attorney and legal consultant at Save Act. Very good morning to you, Ilan.
Good morning.
So we're seeing,
good morning to the listeners.
Thank you, Ilan. We're seeing a lot happening throughout the country, plans for the Archer's funeral this coming Saturday. Table Mountain is being cast in a purple light, as is the Cape Town City Hall. But why are we remembering Desmond Tutu in such a manner?
You know, the Arch was a phenomenal human being, but he was also an ordinary person. He had his weaknesses like everybody else, and he was very quick to play on those. And I guess in so many ways, he reflects what is good in all of us. His role in our past is really quite interesting, because he started off life as a young boy. His parents were his father was a teacher, his mum was a domestic worker. And what sparked his sort of consciousness in a weird way is the story he told about how one day he was with his mum and Trevor Huddleston, who was an Anglican priest at the time working in Sophiatown, doffed his hat at Archbishop Tutu's mother. And it was the first time in his life that a white man had ever doffed his hat in his presence at an African woman. And it made him look at himself and people differently. And he spoke about that incident a lot. And that's just the kind of thing that does shape one's life. From there, he actually wanted to study medicine, but his parents didn't have the wherewithal, unfortunately. So then he became a teacher. And in the course of becoming a teacher and being a teacher, his consciousness developed. And he then decided to give up teaching and become a church person. And you know, the rest, as we know, he grew in the ranks of the church. He was a person of immense courage, actually. I mean, just to give you one tiny example, is there's a well-known story of him jumping off the stage during a protest meeting where he was talking, because the crowd was getting ready to necklace somebody they accused of being an informer, an impimpi, which is what they were called in those days. And he actually threw his body over this person and said, anyone who touches this person, you're going to burn me first before you burn this person. And he saved that man's life. That's how brave he was. You know, I think the other really amazing thing about him is that he had a wonderful sense of humor. He was always telling jokes at his own expense. But underneath that sort of caricature, and what is really amazing is that, you know, when I was a young boy, the way he was portrayed in the media was as this joke of a human being who was somehow or other some kind of church communist that the old apartheid regime pilloried in a way. And for many, many white people, that was the image they had of him, because that's what the media went out of its way to promote. And so when we began to see change happen in this country and his role and function became better known, and after he got the Nobel Peace Prize, people had to see him in a different light and began to, as the truth of who he was began to emerge, everybody saw him in a different way. And so, yeah, you know, the really important thing is, I guess, that we all see ourselves in someone like that. You know, he had great hardship in his life. He suffered from, he had a slight limp. He had a bit of polio as a child and suffered from tuberculosis. He overcame that. He had a couple of tragedies in his family. All of these things made him much more aware of the plight of ordinary people and the hardship that ordinary people go through. And yet through all of that, he sought to promote reconciliation. He sought to promote a sharing of ideas. He always, you know, one of his famous quotes is, if you want peace, you don't talk to your friends. You have to talk to your enemies, for example.
I remember reading that he also said that an enemy is a friend just waiting to be made.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, the other thing he said, and he once said it to me too, because in a hearing I was pushing really quite hard in the Truth Commission, following up on cross-examination, as lawyers sometimes do, and he stopped me. And then afterwards he said to me, my boy, he said, you know, you mustn't raise your voice when you're trying to get through to somebody. You must refine your argument. And I always remember that as a way of saying, you know, actually, just slow down. Just think. Think of what we're trying to achieve here. The one really important thing about his passing for me is that the irony is that his death has sparked a new interest in his role and in his life and in the things that he did, but also in the role of the TRC, which many of us who worked with him there feel is a misunderstood structure that was set up in our country. And it provides a really interesting opportunity because a lot of young people are now reading about his life, about his role, and about the work of the TRC. And I think it gives South Africans an opportunity to revisit some of that work and to reignite the reconciliation project that the TRC's role and function was to start, and which the various governments that came at the end of its work, the Mbeki regime, the Zuma regime, failed to pick up on. One of the ironies of the TRC is we didn't have the power to force anybody to do anything. We made recommendations as a TRC, and it was up to the government to take those recommendations and implement them. And there are a huge number of things that need to be done. Just one small example is there have been no serious prosecutions in over the almost 25 years since the TRC finished its work. One of the inarticulate premises of the TRC was that if people didn't come forward and apply for amnesty or be granted amnesty, that they would be prosecuted, because that is what accountability is about. That is why we can't allow impunity in society. You know, I always think that one of the reasons we have so much rampant corruption is because of the sense of impunity that people can get away with stuff. So one of the jobs of the TRC was to try and promote accountability. And by telling the story of the past and making people aware of the lessons of that history, in a way, we try and remember those lessons so that we don't repeat them. And that was one of the key lessons that certainly Archbishop Tutu tried to promote.
Well, that's one of the things that we are definitely taking away, was his time as chairperson at the TRC. And who could ever forget that image of him with his head on his arms, crying uncontrollably after hearing some of the testimony. Unfortunately, time has caught up with us, so we have to go to news headlines. But Ilana, I really appreciate you making time today. I wish you all the very best for 2022, and we're all going to be watching the memorial service and funeral service this coming Saturday of one of South Africa's great sons. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to chat to you.
That was Ilan Lax. He's an attorney and legal consultant at Save Act. And he was chatting to us about his interactions over the years with the late Archbishop Emeritus Desmond Tutu, who passed away this Sunday at age 90. His funeral memorial service will be held this Saturday.